The film was simultaneously able to critique masculinity, but also celebrate it, like brotherly love and the bond that exists between brothers. A lot of movies either have to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger 80s action movie. Yeah, dude, guns blazing. Or it's like super critical of masculinity. This movie really found a balance of showing what toxic masculinity and then what lovely
positive masculinity is.
Yes.
Literally everything happened because of the dad, but it's like, oh, this curse. No, the curse is a curse of generational trauma, abuse, ego.
Did he love his sons? I think he did in terms of extensions of him or his legacy, but not as individuals. Because if he did, then he would have seen.
It's a red flag.
Because I don't mind it being like overly ham-fisted woke or whatever. I'm fine. Fuck it. Whatever. I've been accused of. I just got accused last episode of hating men, which I don't know how the fuck they came to that conclusion.
What'd you do?
But I just said maybe women not property. That's all I said. That's me personally. That's what I said. And they were like, this man hates women.
It's a certain few sound bites. They really latching on to.
Yeah.
The nigga said, if you don't do what I want in this exact one element of your wedding, I'm defunding the whole fucking thing. That's the most controlling you my property type shit I've ever heard. Like, now look, let me start with my concession before I go off into why I think he's completely fucking tripping and she's 100% right.
He's abusive. He's the worst fucking father this bitch could ever ask for. I got you. Let's go.
Kill him. Put him in prison. Kill him. Shoot his ass in the head.
Kill him. Let the demons have him.
Yeah. He deserves it. Let God sort it out. Yeah.
Let God deal with it.
No, because, okay. Yeah. Said I was a whole misandrist.
You hear that? You hear that? Oh, yeah. You a whole womanizer and you hate niggas at the same time.
Yeah. I was like, I hate everybody. Yeah. I'm a misogynistic misandrist.
Yeah. I'm not a bigot. I hate everyone equally.
It could never be me.
I'm a champion of equality.
Fuck all y'all.
Basically, a civil rights activist.
Pretty much.
I hate all you motherfuckers. And father fuckers. And non-binary parental, figure fuckers, whatever.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And with that being said, shall we go ahead and get into it and introduce this grandiose pod?
Let's go.
So, welcome everybody to Waving the Red Flag, the number one dating relationship and movie traumatic wrestling, coverage podcast in the world and known parts of the universe. So here tonight I present to you the enigmatic and sometimes problematic luchador man of mystery known as erectile destruction in certain parts of the globe. And
I'm learning all kinds of new things about Mac. I was like, who's this guy he's introducing?
What the fuck?
I was like, how did you know all that about me? What?
Yeah.
Oh, I got you
Mac
coming
is known,
next.
He's in the streets. He's known.
But before we get to that, Albert couldn't be here with us tonight because he's actually out being a sommelier to lower middle class people, giving tastings and describing fine wines that they could never afford.
Hell yeah.
Mm.
But,
wait, is he just tasting the wine himself and then telling them what
yes,
it tastes
exactly,
like?
Exactly.
It's too good for those peasants. They don't deserve it.
I don't have enough bottles to spread among all of the masses.
They could never.
But let me just tell you, it is delicious and heady.
And best believe they will somehow leave knowing exactly what those wines taste like without ever
having
experienced it.
He's good with words. That was the plot of that of a comic book. What the fuck was that comic called? Chew.
I haven't seen that one.
It's okay. The plot is like there's this woman who's a food reviewer, and she's so good at food reviewing that like you literally taste like and feel the experience, and she can use it as like an offensive attack because she can describe something that's disgusting and it'll make you vomit.
Oh, that's amazing. Ooh, imagine how else she can use those powers.
Mm. You think it's sexually?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, the voice memo game is crazy.
Immaculate. But
got your nothing at the office.
Tonight, we have a special guest, a renowned internet troubadour recounting modern day epics and fables as seen on both the big screen and the small screen. We've got Macabre Storytelling.
And I also have erectile dysfunction, just to make
yeah.
sure.
Well, let's not leave that out.
Yeah. It's important. It goes on the CV, all right?
At the very last line, it's just so you know, there's the erectile dysfunction. Yeah, in case you're wondering.
Excel, word processing, penis don't work.
That's a soft skill,
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Hey, yo. Brilliantly done. Brilliantly
man, came to the pod tonight, baby. Let's go.
Yes, I'm ready to go. We I'm see you. Straight out the gate. Oh, HR department.
So tonight, man, we are talking about the movie Iron Claw, which, you know, for those that don't know, anybody that's better than me at describing shit, please give like a brief synopsis.
Yo, Zac Efron fucked his face up.
How you just jump into Zac Efron fucked his face up? I was trying to say like what this movie is about real quick.
Is that not what it's about? Oh, my fault. I misunderstood what you were asking, because that's what the movie was about to me. So I would say okay.
Go ahead. What's up?
It's about Zac Efron's face being fucked up.
That's crazy.
but if I'm describing what it's about, it's following like the Von Erickson's family and like their family curse. Like they're a wrestling family all together. So first of all, this like episode is going to be all spoiler shit. So if you haven't seen it, like just be aware of that. But the Von Erickson's are a wrestling family who were like renowned, and like the father was a wrestler, and they all worked together to like create like a wrestling empire. But as they were doing that, they were just plagued by intergenerational trauma, depression, tragedy, all this fucked up shit happened, and basically just decimated the whole family across like time. They lost themselves to wrestling, yeah. Essentially.
And we are about to delve deep all up into that shit. So Zac Efron fucked up his face to portray this role, because I damn sure did not know that was Zac Efron until the credits roll.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't recognize him. You were going to be like,
the whole movie.
You were like, why are people talking about High School Musical? What does this have to do with anything? Yeah, no, but he didn't do it for this movie.
He just,
because it's surgery. Like his face is like that always. Nah.
Well, so yeah,
he got the Lord Farquaad.
So I think they're like, not to like get too speculative, I think there are three explanations. One, his explanation when people brought up about it is that he had some sort of like motorcycle accident and he broke his jaw and during the reconstruction. That's his story. I don't know how much it is true. The second is that he did get some sort of plastic surgery just for vanity and it got botched. Or the third is that he probably on steroids. And given his build in this movie,
steroids don't make your chin like that. They don't do your lip like that. Like his whole face looks different. He got the Kylie Jenner shit. It's filler all in there and all kinds of stuff.
So apparently, though, because I was the same way, they show if you look at a picture of Conor McGregor, how he used to be till now, apparently HGH, that can actually have a lot of effect on your bone structure. And you'll get this like really thick, like if you look at Conor McGregor now, he most likely abused HGH as well. And yeah, his whole neck is like, it's not even like his chin and his neck. It's just like one neck.
Big muscle head.
Again, all legends.
I mean, look, because they put all the Marvel dudes on that same cocktail. Because Zac Efron basically has like the Marvel face now, because he looks like Nanjiani. I forget what the first name is. Kumail Nanjiani. Fucking the dude
another
from
good
the Bear.
Example.
Not the little the British chef dude. The dude who's playing like Adam Warlock, like that guy.
Oh, Will
they
Poulter.
They gave him Poulter. Yeah, they gave fucking Chris Pratt. Like they give him they pump him full of fucking steroids and give him insert a new jaw in there.
Yeah, Kumail particularly, that was a big, because it was
drastic jump.
Yes. I don't know what they gave him.
He was
damn.
Like, yeah, no, I just exercised. It's like, come on, man.
Come on, bro.
Come on. How many jobs did you do to get that shit? Like, fuck out of here.
Exercising his jaw like every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Came out like the Crimson Chin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Crimson Chin trained him.
Yeah, he must have. He's doing a lot of chin-ups. Yeah
but what y'all think about the movie overall, though?
That's true. Yeah, that's a good question. I thought it was amazing. Yeah, as soon as I finished, I thought it was an incredible movie.
I was kind of coming into it. Like, I had no idea of the story. I kind of came into it thinking it was going to be like a fun wrestling romp with like maybe bit of tragedy mixed in. And
I
got a
buddy
really rude awakening there.
Yeah, no, the first
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
2 seconds is, you know, they say my family's cursed. I was like, oh shit, this shit about to be serious as hell. Yeah, no, because it reminded me of like The Wrestler, like I assumed it, and Warrior to an extent. It was kind of in that same vein of like the washed up horror and terror of, you know, being in that world and, you know, destroying your body for like, you know, pennies on the dollar. So I was super into it. I thought it was just a great study of, one, the shit is real. That's what's crazy to me. But just the way that, like, all that trauma and wanting to get something really, really bad can just destroy your whole family and everybody's lives.
Right, yeah. Because I ain't going to lie, like, going into it, I was not looking forward to watching this movie. Off the trailer,
oh, really?
I was like, man, what the fuck? I don't, you know, I was not looking forward to watching the movie. It just looked like something I just wouldn't, it's just something I would not have watched unless, you know, I had to.
Prompted for content, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not going to lie. I ain't got there and get much, you know, sleep, the, you know, the day of, whatever. 20 minutes in, I'm locked in. I'm taking notes and shit.
It was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. But, man, was it sad as fuck, bro. Like, I'm, and it hit home in a couple ways for me, too, like on some personal shit.
I knew, yeah.
And, I, you know, and that shit fucked up my mood. Like, I was sad as hell for, sad up until we recorded, like, you know, the pre-shit, you know what I'm saying? Cause, that's just because I stopped thinking about it.
No, because it's like, because, okay, one thing that I thought about while I was watching it was, I think people, like, I was watching some other people talk about it, the double toasted dudes.
There's moments where he's pushing these kids way too hard, and he is doing it for his to achieve his own dream. Mm-hmm. But then at other times, you could tell, like, he also really does love his kids. He loves his wife. He, you know, they show the tender moments with him, which makes it even worse.
I know.
Because it's like, if you just stop this shit.
And they were like, oh, the dad kind of like, you can kind of see that he like really he does love his kids, but like he's the problem. Da, da, da. And I'm like, when I was watching, I was like, this motherfucker just seems evil to me.
Yeah.
Like he don't seem like he has no redeeming empathy or anything. Cause how does one son of yours tackle you to the ground and almost choke you to death and say you were supposed to protect him? I told you last night he was in a dark place, and you respond with, it was your fault.
It's your fault.
You were supposed to watch after him. He's your brother. Like, bro, that's just, I don't see nothing in him that's good.
Bro, like, at every single turn, the dad was a piece of shit.
Every choice, like, he had. Every opportunity to be a good father.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, he had me in the first 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, well, it seems like he might be a troubled man, you know?
Yeah.
But he definitely loved his kids, but as that shit.
Oh, the black and white scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, the black and white scene. Yes. And then, like, even, like, maybe a scene or two after that. I'm like, okay, he's definitely involved in his kids' lives. He does seem like he loves them. He wants the best for them. But as that movie kept progressing, at every given pivotal moment, he was just such a piece of shit. And then that same shit goes for the mom damn near too. Because, like, I wasn't fucking with the mom either. I'm like, yo, children. I mean, there's plenty of shit we talk about today. I just want to talk about the mom real quick. Like,
no, let's go. Because, I think she's a piece of shit, yeah.
Because, like, you know, when they're kind of, like, growing up, coming of age, what's the youngest boy's name? Mikey.
Oh, the musician?
Yeah, the musician, son. Mikey was, like, the dad was, like, going extra hard on him. Motherfucker clearly don't want to be a wrestler. He wants to explore music. Do that. But the dad's being a dick, being extra hard, trying to get him involved or whatever, da-da-da-da. And then Kevin goes to go and speak with his mom. To see, hey, can you please rein this motherfucker in? And she like, that's between y'all. Nope, I don't want to hear that shit. We're getting ready for church.
Anyway, just putting on my makeup. Oh, okay, it's not a problem. It's
right.
Like, yeah, because it's a very, like, particular kind of neglect. And I wonder, because it's like, I think it's easy in situations like that to be like, oh, she's a victim of him too, and all that kind of stuff. And I, there's something there, but I think if you're a parent, if your partner's not actively beating your ass, I think you've got a responsibility to resist their abuse of your children. Like, you've got, and if you're not standing up, I think at that point, I'm going, you're part of this problem. You're allowing and facilitating this man literally killing five boys. Like, actually, I think it was six because they left one out from the movie. So it's like,
I don't know how I felt about that in particular, that decision.
They didn't say they didn't say what happened.
Well, so I think it was sort of like a from what I understand, I think it was Chris. It was the one
Chris
they left
Von Erich, I think.
So he was born, I believe he had asthma. He was on the shorter side, I think like 5'7". And because of these two things, it really kind of prevented him from rising. I think he wanted to be a wrestler, but it kind of prevented him from like rising in the ranks. He just didn't have the build or ability.
He couldn't do it.
He ended up also shooting himself, I think, in the head.
Damn, is that the real life story?
That's the real life story. That's the real life story.
They changed it in the movie.
Chris wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Which is insane when you think about when you watch the movie and you can't even believe that this happened to all three of these boys.
And more shit happened.
And to think that there was another one, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, because I'm like, because when shit started getting fucked up, I'm like, this all happened in the span of 2 months.
Right, because the baby was like, I was like, yo, the baby is only like two now. Oh, how is shit still happening?
Oh, I do think that was a change. Because like me and my girlfriend, we looked into it after, and that's when we discovered about Chris. They did streamline it. For example, Jeremy Allen White's character, after he wins the title, it makes it look like he goes out.
He fucks himself up that night.
That night. I think it was like 2 years later or something.
Oh, okay. So did. So like it was the very same night when they said that, they don't want me back.
So Kevin, Zac Efron's character was in Kevin, Jeremy Allen White was Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Kerry.
It was after, I think, David, who was the brother who died in Tokyo.
Yes.
After his death, Kerry was that, there's that scene where, you know, Kevin wanted to step up, but Kerry, I can do it, Dad. I want to be the one that does
it. Flip the coin, and he got to do it.
Yeah. So Kerry won. He wins the title because he beat Ric Flair. That was it.
He beats Ric Flair. Yeah.
In the movie, he literally comes home that night with the belt to, like, the empty house. It's almost that emptiness of finally achieving your, you know, this big goal, this lifelong goal, and then what do you have to show for it? It's once you've reached that apex, where do you go from there?
I think that was something that was also fucking me up about the movie, because they did a good job of like kind of hiding this, even though they talk about it in the movie. But I'm like, isn't this shit all fake? Like, these aren't even, like, y'all are winning shit that isn't even a competition. Like, was my understanding of what the fuck was going on. It's like, oh yeah, we fought hard and we won. It's like, but who's going to win this is decided before you even step into the ring, if I'm understanding all of what you all have talked about. So the way they were like talking about some of these fights, I was like, what are y'all even training for? Like, some of it was like, just felt silly to me. Well, I mean, they did a good job of like making it to where I didn't think about that much, but
that's the thing with wrestling, because like it is very much so scripted, and it's pretty much scripted, but like it's still like these people are like real athletes, trained athletes, professionals that do go out and put their body in. They body on the line 100%. Every night.
They cut themselves and shit.
Yeah,
to, like
you
the
know,
blood on their
so,
face. Yeah,
and like a lot of the times, like they do get injured by accident. Like shit happens all the time.
Yo,
but
when Zach got slammed on the ground,
on concrete.
Ooh.
Yeah, on concrete.
Because I was like,
I feel for him so much because he's so gentle. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the most, and it's fucked up because he went through the most shit. If you really think about it.
And he had the most heart for it, you know?
Yeah, because he had that big brother spirit. Like, he had to take care of everything, but he also did have his own somebody to lean on, of course, and that got really tough for her.
Yeah.
And, like, his family. Yeah. But anyway.
I think a good way to think about it, because I kind of used to be when I was younger, you know, I kind of downplayed the idea of, like, oh, they're wrestling, it's fake. But then you actually see what they go through. It's like, that's not, it's fake in terms of, like, the drama, but not in terms of the physicality.
I'm not saying that it's not like real in terms of that they're like, it's like, it's like being a ballerina or something like that. You're going, here's the choreography I have to go through. And this requires pushing my body. Cause that's the whole time I was watching, I was like, oh, this ballet, this whole thing feels like Black Swan. Like when he's doing that thing in the ring where he's like bouncing himself against the ropes and he's like he's like dropping himself and falling and getting back up. I was like, oh, you're doing like, you're doing dance routine, like fucking iterations or whatever.
You are, and then, such an art student.
Yeah. And then, but that's what it was. I mean, that's what you could tell whoever made the movie that they were thinking that same thing. Mm-hmm. But you don't, you're not going in there surprised with the outcome. Like, oh, I lost. Like, yeah. You know who's going to lose before you walk in.
I think,
like, you know?
I think a good way to put it is like, think of it as like if you think of like American Idol, obviously it's supposed to be a singing competition, who has the best voice, but also does personality, does that also take, because like there's that scene where Zac Efron's trying to like ramp up the crowd and then his brother takes the mic and does it for him, and then he kind of wins over the crowd, and then the father's like, oh no, I think he should do it.
He should go first.
It's almost like several actors auditioning for a movie who ends up getting it. Kind of like
that's
that,
a victory.
Yeah.
What you just said was something that really I really loved about the movie, is that there were all these moments in between the tragedy, in between the suicides and the deaths and the self-harm and all of that kind of stuff. There were so many moments that felt like this really like slice of life, comfortable nostalgia, family love. Like just when they go down to like the fucking their local college, and like they're like, Or like the local wrestling ring, and everybody's like storming in. It reminded me of that scene from like Atlanta, where everybody, or ATL rather, where everybody's like coming to the skate rink. Like it was just this like community coming together around a situation thing. And that moment where they're in the backstage. And
why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Zach says, why didn't you let me talk? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh man, I thought I was helping. You know, but you're right. You really think about how they've been raised and how their father pits them against each other. And like, you know, he's my favorite, but you're second. But the rankings can always change and you got to push harder. And yeah, your brother died, but it's sick shit. But the brothers never felt like they turned against each other.
No.
They, like, despite the fact that the way the dad was, they were all like, come on, man, you got to be softer on Mikey. Like, cool, you got a gig. We'll sneak you out of the house and we'll drive you there. Like, you're right. I did interrupt you and like, take the stage. I thought I was helping you because I could see you floundering, but I realized that you know, I didn't give you a chance to kind of, you know, step into your own. And like, they just all had that love that I thought was really beautiful, despite their father, you know?
The film was simultaneously able to critique masculinity, but also celebrate it. It's like brotherly love and just the bond that exists between brothers. I feel like a lot of movies, they kind of have to be like either like Arnold Schwarzenegger 80s action movie where it's all about, yeah, dude, guns blazing, like bros, yada, yada. Or it's like super critical of masculinity. Mm. This movie really found a balance of showing what toxic masculinity is and then what lovely
positive masculinity
is. Yes.
Because so much of their brotherhood and the way they like showed up for each other, even the way Zac Efron struggled with, but then eventually did show up for his wife and his children, was like, that's what being a man is. All of that, you know? And like, not even just the like, because I feel like sometimes positive masculinity is like, you know, I'm a man, but I garden. And it's like, well, that's not positive masculinity. That's just a man doing something traditionally not masculine.
You just like gardening,
but like, yeah, you just like gardening. But or like, I'm a man, but I also, it's like something that I liked about the movie is that they showed the positive aspects of shit that is clearly masculine. Like when they were playing football and wrestling with each other and like pushing each other and like, yeah, no, I'm the best, da da da. But it's like, it's a love dance, you know? It's like we're brothers, we're competing. But at the end of the day, we don't want to truly harm each other. Similar to wrestling, this is cooperative, but it's specifically man shit, if that makes sense.
But and then like with the, when it comes to like the toxic masculinity portion of it was all throughout the movie when shit started to go left and like, you know, these deaths and tragedies started to happen, and the dad set the tone for the first funeral. Ain't no crying, take them shades off, show your face.
Yeah.
Don't nobody cry. And then, like, after that, after every fucked up thing happened, you never saw, like, not one of them cry, but it was mainly focused on Kevin, i.e. Zac Efron.
Yeah.
And, like, how he was not crying, but he was clearly in so much pain, but you got all this pain and hurt just pent up and bottled up. You see it building up in Zac Efron, but it's manifesting in his brothers. And, like, them committing, committing suicide and just not taking care of themselves and trying to push through
the
pain or whatnot.
David died was crazy. Like, that's self-harming toxic masculinity, because I can't imagine vomiting a fucking, like, bucket of blood into a toilet after being in excruciating pain and being like, nah, I think I'm going to go to Japan and get some work done. Like,
right.
You want to maybe go to the doctor a little bit?
Just to check up?
Nah, I'm fine. I'm
good. That was sort of, you know, it was funny because I remember that scene, and I actually, at first I didn't like that scene because, you know, I kept thinking in that scene, well, obviously, like, Kevin is sort of like our POV character, but I kept remembering that scene where he comes home and the father tells him that he died in Tokyo.
Yes.
I was kind of upset that it was like, oh, why didn't they show us that scene of, you know, him in the hotel room? And then but then I kind of rethought it, and I'm like, I'm glad they didn't, because it shows that sort of, the attachment. Like, imagine, like, getting home and learning that your brother has died, and he wasn't even, like, by your side. You couldn't even say bye to him.
Yeah.
He was thousands of miles away. That loneliness, that isolation of just being in some random hotel room.
There was no hospital bed that you come to sit by his side as he passes away. It's just like, yeah, this is some shit that happened on the other side of the planet.
Yeah, but he did.
Yesterday.
He did get the card from David, thinking that he would be coming home, like, you know. And that was fucked up. But it's like,
after the death,
after he found out, like, that card came, it was like, that's fucked up. But at the same time, it is kind of, like, some sort of farewell. Like he said, like, they kind of got it's like you kind of get to hear your brother's voice in a sense, or afterwards. Experience your brother, like, after they're gone, which was a gift.
That's
in and of itself, you know what I mean?
It is. Because, I mean, sadness is a weird fucking thing. Because I've had, like I've been going back through my emails and stuff to just, because, you know, your inbox gets crazy. Like, on paper, you're supposed to have, you know, inbox zero, or whatever the fuck. But it's like everybody's Gmail got 3,000 fucking emails in the shit.
Yeah,
20K. God damn. 20, 30K. So it's like you got just emails. But I'm scrolling back through them, and I'm like, I've got some emails from people who are dead. And it's strange to, you know, kind of go, like, if I were to write back to this email address, there's nobody on the other end. And, like, these are the words of, you know, and I've even looked at some, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I didn't get to reply to this one, and I never will, you know what I mean? Like, I could, but there's nobody to read it, you know? And it just, something about, like, the way the technology and, like, writing allows us to, like, experience people who we've lost is, like, some wild shit. And it hurts, but, yeah, it is a little bit of a gift. It's like, you know, what is it? Love persevering, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was, my God, all of it. I mean, just so much love persevering, because all of them left notes.
They did. That's true.
It's a good point, yeah.
Some shorter than others, but yeah.
Very short.
Sure.
Hey, yo.
Peace, bro.
I'm going to somewhere better than this motherfucker.
I think that
on
was
the side, my boy. Yeah.
That because obviously, like, the film serves as sort of like a tribute to the brothers, particularly with that final scene where, you know, they all reunite. And I think that is in part, you know, I think as the film alone is incredible, but, you know, looking back, I do think that that scene in particular does make Chris's removal from the narrative kind of sting. It kind of feels a little bit, because it's, I don't know, it just kind of feels a little strange to think about that, like, we have that wonderful scene of, like, all the brothers reuniting in the afterlife.
Sixth brother.
Except Chris. Yeah, it's kind of...
My dumb ass is about to say, well, what if Chris didn't want to be in the movie?
No. Right.
What
the right
Chris
instinct,
had objections?
He didn't want to show up for rehearsal, so they just, you know, it's fine. And Josh thinking everything, it's all, this is a reality TV. They all really killed themselves on this movie. Jeremy Allen White is no longer with us. Yo, also, he killed himself. I don't know if this is how it happened in the real life, because he set him on the table, and I was like, why is his head not fucked up? Like, why is his head not blown off? But he killed himself by shooting himself in the heart?
Yeah.
I was wondering the same shit, but I thought to myself, like, could that be, like, symbolism for something, like, literally being shot through the heart? And, like, not being able to take life anymore, like having this darkness just consuming you. And like you achieve this great thing, but it's not anywhere near good enough. Like your body is deformed and you can't hide it any longer. You're trying to hide this, you know, these deficiencies. And like maybe it's like that was like being shot through the heart to him. And so maybe that was like a literal representation of it, but I don't know. That's
a wild way to go out. That shit got to hurt. That's a wild one. Because I'm like, you got it. Because you kill, you go,
Not to make fun of. Ooh, this hurts. We're not making fun of. That's a wild way to go out, man.
I don't think it's distasteful to say that. Like, that just shit has to fucking hurt like a motherfucker while you're dying. Like, you shoot yourself in the head and you're gone.
I mean, that's why you did it through the heart. You shoot, you know, that's the same. Can't have a similar effect. That could be an NTKO.
That's what I'm saying. I think you shoot yourself from the heart, and it takes you like a good like 5 or 6 seconds to die.
It may have also been a matter of like, you know, maybe he didn't want his mother, you know, or maybe he wanted an open casket or something.
I think that is that's a good because it did allow for them to do an open casket because he didn't you know shoot himself in the head. And then seeing this, like at the end when he's sitting at the table with his brother's body that he's placed on the dining room table after almost I was like, yo, when he was choking his dad, I was like, kill this motherfucker. Just finish it. Just do it. Because he's just a ball of fucking there's nothing left. And I don't know that the father was a psychopath. I think he maybe lost his way somewhere along there and just couldn't see what he had become. Maybe they exaggerated things for the movie. And because he once was like a saxophone art boy who used to write music for his girl and poetry, and somewhere along there he lost that and just became this monster. But the man who was getting choked out by Kevin was not, there was nothing salvageable at that point, I don't think.
Something that kind of unnerves me is sometimes I think a lot of these men, because of their sense of masculinity, they almost treat their wives, particularly their children, as not only less individuals, but almost like props in their life. They're like, they're extensions 100%. Of them.
Of my legacy.
Yes. And that's
exactly what this dude was.
And to your guys' point when they said, like, did he love his sons? I think he did in terms of extensions of him or his legacy, but not as individuals. Mm. Because if he did, then he would have seen, clearly this is not good for you and your mental health and physical health either. So.
Right. And that's actually one thing I want to get into is actually addressing the curse of the, what was their last name?
Von Erichs.
The curse of the Von Erichs. Like the curse, and I was thinking about this like while I was watching the movie, is like the curse is a curse of generational trauma, abuse, ego, and that's another word that's not coming to me right now. But when I thought about like, you know, when the curse originated, they said that the dad took the last name Von Erich from his mother, the dad's mom, and their side. Mm. They had the problems. So I'm kind of thinking like, okay, like what if like he got so much abuse from like his mom's side of the family, which began the cycle of or continued the cycle of abuse and generational trauma that he later then passed down to his sons, i.e. the curse. Because literally, all that shit happened because of the fucking dad.
Oh, 100%.
Literally everything happened because of the dad. But it's like, oh, this curse, no. Your father is not treating y'all like humans. He's not taking care of y'all emotionally. He's not allowing y'all to have no emotions. He's not listening to y'all. All he is worried about and consumed with is a fucking WWF World Champion wrestling belt.
Just crazy. Like, how do you lose sight of your children in that moment? I can't even imagine it.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Because, you know, every single boy, except Jeremy Allen White's Carrie, his one seemed like that could have happened without the dad to an extent. Because it was like he won, then he chopped his foot off in the motorcycle accident, and then all of the things that came from that of him feeling washed up and not good enough, which, to be fair, all of that not feeling good enough stuff was about how the dad raised them. Mm-hmm. But David and Mike, those two were like direct, like, you killed them. This boy was vomiting blood, and you probably knew about it. You saw him in pain. You sent him out to Japan anyway. The boy, Mikey, you put this motherfucker in the ring when he kept saying he didn't want to, and he fucking lost his shit. And then you tried to put him back in the ring after he had the fucking toxic shock syndrome and his brain was all fucked up.
For no reason.
And now he can't play music.
Didn't even have to happen. Like, if there was one of them that did not need to wrestle,
it was Mikey.
It was Mikey. Like, and there was no reason. I mean, that was crazy if that was actually how he, well, not actually how he got injured, because that was just such a freak accident.
It was just some it was a shoulder dislocation.
Some simple shoulder shit. But the surgery, like, he had a fever, the toxic shock, going to a coma from something so minor, I guess, especially by today's standards.
Oh, yeah.
We would never think about that happening from a shoulder injury.
And that kind of shit does happen. It's rare, but it's like he shouldn't have even been in the ring in the first place. But two, the fact that after that shit happened, they still were trying to talk to him about, like, wrestling. This motherfucker was literally mentally, like, handicapped.
He wasn't the same.
He was talking different. He was walking different. He was breathing different. Like, he was in the interview and they were like, hey, so what do you think about this? And he was like, I'm gonna be back soon.
The reporter asked him, so when you coming back? What the fuck do you mean, like, bro, when y'all you don't coming
see,
back?
Y'all don't it see almost, how he can't even move his hands. Like,
it was almost darkly comic, where he's like sitting there, barely able to string words. His eyes are kind
slumped
of
slumped over. Like,
it's like, so when are we getting? It's like, what the fuck? Like, what the hell was wrong with you?
Are you serious?
I'm injured, and I'm never going to be better again, probably. And then there's that scene where he tries to play the guitar, and you can be like, that's
don't fuck with me.
That's
dude.
When he's going to kill himself.
That scene,
because it's like he doesn't have what he was put on this earth to create music. And we get to see him in his element one time. All the girls is feeling him. His bros, like, took him out one night. We're going to sneak you out in the pickup truck. We'll push it down the fucking, you know, driveway so that mom and dad don't hear. We're going to go out and have a great night. You're going to get to be who you want to be. We got to get back to wrestling after this, but you get to be who you want to be. And now, flash forward, he can't play the guitar no more because his brain is all fucked up. His arms are fucked up. His body's fucked up. What am I alive for? I'm out of here.
Y'all remember the song he was singing that night?
I don't know. What was it?
Oh, how did it go again?
Past the grave forever. He just kept saying that shit. I think that's a real song.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah,
I think so.
I do know that the song, to your point, the song, and now that I'm rethinking about it, it's like very dark. The song that plays when they're all walking to, like, the scene you mentioned when they're all walking to, like, the, not the rink, but like the area where they're all hanging out. It's like the 70s. And there's like that big tracking shot. It's Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult. Uh-huh. Kind of foreshadowing. It's like, oh my God. Like, looking back, I'm like, Jesus. Yeah. I think the last time I was on, or the time before that, we were talking about Whiplash. It's interesting because I kind of got some similar vibes from this film in the sense of being motivated and being driven and having goals is good. Obviously.
I think so.
Ambition is great. So. And obviously, in order to reach your ambitions, there are times when you have to suffer. You have to go through hardship. You have to go through difficulty. But I think particularly, and this is what I'm sort of scared of with a lot of young men nowadays, is I think a lot of young men almost associate suffering with some sort of like higher purpose. Like, the more I'm suffering, the harder my life is. It's all going to be worth it for something. It's all going to be towards something.
Do you think there's a little bit of truth to that? Because I was having this discussion with someone the other day. I was talking about, you ever seen that, I think it's a like a coming of age practice where they've got this like wicker basket, like mitten, and it's got a bunch of ants in it. And you put your hand inside of the mitten and the ants bite you on your hand and it hurts really, really, really bad. Like, some of the worst pain you ever experienced in your life, like your hand being dipped in lava. And it's meant to be a kind of transformational. And I kind of think, like, I see the value of pain to some extent. I see the value of being able to toughen yourself to pain or kind of sacrifice a little bit of yourself to your goals and things like that. I think you think maybe otherwise.
Or I think I think pain and suffering, like, obviously, like, you know, if you're working out, obviously it sucks, you're tired, your muscles are sore, but it's all to achieve a goal, to reach a certain end goal. The issue is that what happens when you kind of get lost, when you sort of and kind of very much like the men in the movie are doing, where they're all striving for this, like you said, the championship, but like, A, what happens when I get it, as we saw with Kerry, where he just, the night of winning it, he just, you know, he realized his brother was still dead. He just didn't really have anything left. Or two, how much is too much? How much mental anguish? How much sacrifice to your personal life, to your mental well-being? Because we could say the same thing for Mikey. Like, that was, it's like, oh no, you just keep pushing, man. Just keep trying as hard as you can, no matter how much it hurts. In that case, we recognize, well, no, there was a time when he should have stepped back, stopped this. It's not worth all of the pain you're going to go through. Not to say like you shouldn't go through hardship, but if that hardship, it's just needless suffering, where do you call it quits? When do you put a stop to it?
It can be a positive thing to experience, like, you know, trials, tribulations, because that shit is just going to happen. It's a part of life. So it can be good to experience that and get through it and grow through it, because like, suffering happens. Pain happens. It's a part of life. It ain't just about all just working out. You're going to go through times when you have mental anguish, physical anguish, emotional anguish, all sorts of fucked up shit is going to happen to you. But what I agree with Mag is, like, some guys get so caught up in just the suffering itself, and it's just drowned out in a sea of blackness, of just a sea of suffering. And it becomes like suffering just for the sake of suffering, or I'm strong, I can take it. Put all your suffering on me. Like, I don't deserve, or I don't need love, kindness, tenderness. I won't accept someone else's love, kindness, and tenderness to like free myself from that. Because like, that was another big ass thing that was missing in all of the brothers' lives, except for Kevin.
Kevin.
And he was fucking that up at one point. Like, he was lucky, you know, he had a good woman.
He pulled it in, yeah. And she was patient. You know, understandably, I mean, motherfucker had a... Really had a lot going on, so yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, like, I just feel like, especially like, if you are a man, because say what you want, as if you like a cishet man operating in society, like, you do kind of have to have a certain toughness to you, but also you have to have a kindness to you.
It's expected, yeah.
It's expected, but you should have a kindness to you, and you should be given that space to be able to be kind and be soft and not always have to fucking be strong. We humans, like, just like anybody else, and men need to hear that, know that, and be given that space to just be a fucking human being and not just try to be fucking strong all the time.
For me, the question that brings up is, how do you teach a man specifically what healthy quitting looks like? How do you teach a man when to quit? How do you give him space when you're raising him, for instance, to go? Because that's the thing that I struggle with, because there's elements of what the father did. Like, I think that the way the father conducted himself just went all the way off the deep end, straight into evil. But I've seen so many other portrayals of fathers where it's like, this is kind of on the fence, because sometimes you do have to push the people that you're responsible for to go a little bit beyond what they might have otherwise. You know, your kid... They scratch their knee one time in soccer practice, and they go, I never want to play soccer again. And you kind of have to go, look, I know it seems like this is the end of the world, but in the larger context of your life, you're going to have more situations than this, and I want you to try again. If you want to quit again by next summer, then we can quit. So how do you provide that space to be like, look, Mikey, you maybe want to play music, but let's be realistic here. By the time you get through university, you lose your hair. You know what I'm saying? You're not particularly handsome. You're really low-key not that good at it. Cool, you're going to get some pussy in college because people like musicians. And then what do you have? But this wrestling shit, this has been feeding our family for generations. Are you sure you want to give it a try? Now, still at the other side of this, I don't think that can you make a living from this is the end-all, be-all of what you should encourage your children to do. I think that's also toxic thinking. But sometimes you got to push them a little bit. But when do you know when to quit?
Or how do you find ways to balance? So, like, for example, one thing that I often hear when I would be arguing, like, for women entering, like, STEM fields, it can be very discouraging for a woman to go in to say, like, maybe she really wants to be a STEM major, or mathematics, or physics, whatever, and she kind of has to deal with the derision of her male peers who don't want to see her there.
Yeah.
And one of the arguments that people often use is, if that was enough to discourage her, then maybe she didn't want it hard enough. Maybe she wasn't.
Bullshit, yeah.
But that's, yeah, exactly, where it's like, in some cases, it's like, yeah, you do have to put up with bullshit. Yeah, you do have to put up with, like, what people say, what they think, and you kind of have to overcome that, of course. But there is a limit where it's like, I'm not stepping away because I don't want to achieve this goal. I'm stepping away because I'm afraid that the cost of achieving this goal is going to cost me every other facet of my life, my family, my mental health, my well-being. It's like, you know, it's, could I sit, like, if I really wanted to be like the best streamer in the world, I could just sit in this room 15 hours a day and just try it and break up with my girlfriend and never see my family. But is that...
Do it, bro. Do it.
Is well, that...
Yeah, I'll watch.
Yeah.
Let's go.
That play, look, say, hustle. That silver plaque is going to turn gold in a month, baby.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, man. You got to get the diamond plaque, bro. You're not hustling hard enough.
I'm going to get one even beyond that. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah. It's made of rubies and shit. I don't know. It's made out of black matter.
But yeah, it's like... And then... But even even if we did say that, let's say like 30 years later, I did achieve it. I'm like the most streamed YouTuber ever, most subscribers, and I've achieved it. But I have no girlfriend, no kids, no family, yeah. No parents. It's, what are we, like, where was the balance? 15
million views, but no vision.
Yeah.
I feel you. No, but see, I think we look at sacrifice from, like, this legacy historical lens, where it's like, we look back at, she was the first woman astronaut. He was the first black man to swim in a pool. And it's like, you look back and you go, wow, that must have been, like, amazing. To fucking do this, to be that person, because you achieved it and you try hard and it's whatever. And it's like, yeah, she died of radiation poison at 27, and he, you know, was drowned by a mob of rape. And it's like, from a historical standpoint, we look and go, this person was important. Martin Luther King was important. Mary Curie was important. Malcolm X was important. Joan of Arc was important. And when you look at that, you kind of forget, like, but this was somebody's life. You know, some people get 80 years. Some people only get 15 years. Some people get 35 years or whatever. And it's like, what do you want the ingredients of your life to look like? And even if you have a life that people look back on and go, that was great, and you move the culture forward, what does it really count for if you were miserable the whole time and you never really connected with anybody and you never got to know love or any of that? It's like, yeah, cool. Maybe you were the greatest, but were you happy? So if you want to go into the STEM field, is it worth it?
And to Josh, to your point about like these guys who kind of feel about like their suffering, who kind of get lost in the sauce where they're like, just like this endless sea of suffering, and they kind of convince themselves, no, it's going to matter. I'm going to matter to someone. Mm. One of the big parts of the pathology of any sort of like mass shooter or like spree shooter is the sense that I will be remembered for something after I'm gone. It can be something horrible. It can be the worst thing imaginable, but people will still know I was here. I made some sort of impact. It's scary to think that like a lot of young men are put in this position where they're so focused on not even like their day-to-day life, but what people are going to say about them after they're dead, which is like, it's like, I mean, why are you thinking about
that? I think that's everybody, not just guys. Like that's a... I think we put that lens on everybody who's trying to achieve something to the sacrifice of their own life.
And that's the thing, though, because it just goes to show you it's not even like about a gender thing. It's not about a man, woman, or like, you know, all the good people that fall in between and outside of it. It's just something that's wrong in the fucking ecosystem, point blank, period. And it's, if you think about like how the media presents things, it's a lot of fear mongering. Like fear baiting is a very popular way to get people to engage, to drive, you know, revenue, to drive traffic, to drive numbers, clicks. It really just boils down into money. Like it's very evil in terms of like what it's actually doing to the American people. And it just creates this vacuum of just fucking toxicity and suffering. And like, again, like it's not even just about men and women, but I know a lot of, there are times when it's quite clearly shown where people don't give a fuck about how a man feel. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
I saw somebody say, yo, if men are doing all this suffering and silence, why the fuck do I keep hearing y'all crying?
Oh, my God.
I was like, that's funny, that's, but that's kind of the point.
That was a good one. But
you're wrong for that.
But it's like, because it's a thing of like, we have to be in it together. And again, I do stand on the thing of, hey, It starts with men and how we treat one another and how we raise our kids. And we are, you know, on a much better trend, you know, as of like our generation, the generation before us,
generation before us.
Yo, that was one other thing I was thinking while I was watching the movie, where I was like, yo, if this what the dad is like, imagine what his dad was like. Because I know in his head, he was breaking generational curses with his wrestling shit.
I was thinking about that Bill Burr joke the whole movie, bro.
Oh, yeah. Wait, how's it go?
It was like, he was like, my dad never, like, hugged me. And, you know, he was like, my dad, like, was not, like, a loving home. It wasn't da-da-da-da. And he was like, yo, man, I, you know, one day I asked my mom, like, you know, what's kind of up with that? Like, we never hug, we never do all this, da-da. And she was like, well, your dad said that if we hugged you, it would make you gay. And...
What movie was this?
It was in a Bill Burr stand-up special. But check this out, though.
That's true, though.
But the thing is, but the switch from it is that Bill Burr's dad was abused by his father, and like had a much harder life than what he put Bill Burr through. Although Bill Burr's life was kind of rough from the love that he got from his dad, but it was still better than what was done to him.
Yeah, no, because you know this wrestling dude was probably getting beat the because he one thing he didn't do, he never beat the shit out of the kids, or at least we didn't see that.
Yeah,
he never beat them. So it's like he probably in his head he was progressing. He's like, I'm gonna get all the kids on a farm, and we're gonna wrestle, and we're gonna get out the hood with this shit. I'm gonna raise them the way my father never did, and I'm gonna show them that they can be great. Damn, I killed them all. I thought I was so close. Yeah, not I indirectly murdered all my babies.
The Von
Holy
Erich
shit.
Curse. God damn it. Damn.
It strikes Erich again. Curse. It has nothing to do with me. It's the magic of the universe.
It was their damn fault. Yo, they should have been there for each other.
Yeah, they should have. Yo, also, what the fuck were they farming on that? Because it just seemed like a gay, like, Brokeback Mountain jean shorts and cowboy boots.
Yo, man,
walking around not doing anything.
In draws is insane. I'm talking about like dick all up in the camera, goddamn.
Yeah, it was. I was very erogenous. I was like, okay, I see what you do. We see you.
We never even see any animals.
Giving
on
ass
the
and thighs.
Farm, do we?
There were no animals. No. There was no corn. It wasn't no carrots or nothing. What was that farm?
It was just on a farm.
It was just aesthetics. It was just like, ooh, I'm a cowboy. Like, what was this farm about?
I mean, they had plenty of corn and like wheat products on the table. And they always had a full ass spread for dinner.
They did. The food looked good. The biscuits and bacon and eggs. Okay. Yeah, it looked not great, but it was Southern.
You know, I mean, it's hard to fuck up biscuits, bacon, and eggs.
Well, it's easy to fuck up biscuits if you're making them from scratch, but I agree.
Yeah, true that. I don't fuck with biscuits anyway, but anyway.
You don't eat biscuits?
No. Don't like them. Never do.
That's crazy.
Unless they're like smothered in gravy, I can't do it either. Too bready.
Yeah. I used to, when I was young, I used to pork gravy smothered on biscuits.
Look at this.
Oh, man. I don't know how I didn't die.
Chunky little boy right here.
Oh, man. A little back big. Oh. It went all the way to the front.
My back grow biggeth.
Hallowed be thy name.
Oh, thy
wings be
come.
Done.
Thy hunger be done. In my bed as it is in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck was going on with that farm. I don't know what was going on with that farm.
Yeah, no.
Yo, do y'all think that Kevin should have got his family out of wrestling entirely? Because that was the thing that I was thinking where I was like, because they show you that like in the credits, they show you like they still on that wrestling shit. They're all wrestlers. They're all still all of that. And he's still teaching the kids how to wrestle and all that. And I'm like, man, it reminds me of Soul Food. Like you.
We're going to pause this for the benefit of all y'all who never saw Soul Food. Soul Food is a movie about a big, humongous black grandmother, aptly named Big Mama. Big Mama demonstrates her love by feeding herself and her offspring enormous amounts of pig lard. Then, get this, Big Mama's arteries are so clogged, they gotta amputate her arm.
It was her leg!
Right, okay, whatever, leg. Then, she dies of a heart attack. Or another stroke, or something.
God called her home.
And what does the family do after she dies? They get together for a Sunday dinner and eat the same food that just killed Big Mama. The same food! They didn't learn a lesson. Nobody went on a diet, and that's the end of the movie.
All that shit happened, and y'all still doing the same shit to kill the whole family.
Yeah.
It's like a different drive and motivation behind it now, though. Like,
yeah.
Because his dad was on some... We getting this belt or we dying trying, each and every one of y'all. Oh, it's only one left now.
And I guess it's up to you.
Yeah. So But yeah, so the whole motivation behind it is totally different because, like, they love the sport of wrestling, and he loved wrestling with his brothers. So I can understand passing that on without the crazy expectations.
If, I guess then that raises the question of, like, how long after a funeral do you get back to business?
That motherfucker got back to business the same night, nigga.
No, it was during the service. He was like, "So look, they were still in the fucking suits.
They was
like,
they the was back, at home like, though. They were still at got back home, but they were still in the suits. But Mac, you was about
still
to
had
say
a
something.
Fucking tie on.
It's hard because like, is keeping himself and his children from doing something they might potentially love, is that kind of letting the father win? Is that almost like letting the curse carry on in a sense of it's still controlling our lives to an extent? Or should we? We are able to wrestle to, like Josh's point, without the expectation, without the toxicity that has plagued us our whole lives. We're almost taking it back in a way. We're taking wrestling back.
I agree.
I don't know.
But wrestling does seem like an inherent, like it actually inherently seems like an injurious kind of practice.
From less like a,
I don't know if they still
physical.
From a physical perspective, like it's like you're cutting yourself and you're injuring yourself and you're slamming your body down. You're doing all this kind of stuff. And it's like this shit just isn't good for you.
I mean,
at the beginning, I thought Zac Efron was I thought he had got paralyzed. I was like, oh, wait, we getting straight into the curse. Like when he got slammed on the ground.
Yo, God.
Yeah. I was like, this is the first fight. He's already gone, you know. Yeah.
I mean, it might be like a little bit more dangerous than like, you know, football. Rugby, like whatever other contact sport, you know what I'm
painting.
Saying?
Painting.
Yeah, you can fuck. Well, I tell you, that guy during carpal tunnel ain't no joke.
I lost a few people to that.
Hell
one.
Yeah, shoot. It's true. Now all of them taking your good
hand.
Hand
seize up. Yeah.
Taking your strength. Yeah.
Can't make the mashed potatoes the same.
Mm-mm.
Ruins the holidays.
Making goop scoop with the guy during strong hand.
My back big, but my hand small.
Mm-mm. A big back and a small hand is a crazy combination, goddamn.
You're just shoveling it in one teaspoon at a time.
Ooh-wee. Love in every bite, goddamn.
Yeah.
But one part that did kind of, I don't want to say take me out, but I just kind of took me by surprise was the scene where, was it when Ric Flair comes up to Efron after he loses the fight, I think. And we have like a extended scene of the dude doing kind of like the Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get that part. I was like, I didn't really understand the, was it supposed to show like Ric Flair is someone who's like, look, man, wrestling's awesome and fun. And then they're sitting there like miserable. They're supposed to be
I love that
enjoying
scene.
This, but
I,
cause apparently Ric Flair didn't fuck with that scene, but I was like, he's the realest. Like his view seemed like the healthiest, like, y'all niggas really back here crying and bro, it's fake. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, chill. Let's go get a beer. And they were like, nah, we got to be sad and suffer because you beat us. What you mean I beat you? It wasn't a fight.
So,
they told us who was going to win.
I will give you a rematch anytime
any
you
day.
Want, baby. You a crazy motherfucker. Like
you great. Let's grab a drink.
It almost,
I was like, this is the healthiest person in this movie.
It is clearly not, but okay. But yeah.
It almost.
That's what I.
Like, it almost made the whole. It almost made everything more like. Not humorous, but like
absurd,
ironically,
like,
ironically absurd. The fact that, like, you know, not, I think it would have been just as absurd if they're talking about like the Super Bowl or the Stanley Cup. But the fact that it's like we're talking about like professional wrestling here, and we're getting so it's just oh my god, and you just ruined your life over this. Even if you get it, it's just this. It's like
And the daddy was like this, at first, this motherfucker was just trying to get the regional belt, not even the worldwide belt. Like, it just, the goal post just kept getting moved. He just kept getting greedier with it. But anyway, but no, like, that Ric Flair, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I did not care for the person that played Ric Flair. I didn't like the Ric Flair's monologue. Like, they could have got Will Ferrell from Eastbound and Down to play Ric Flair in that movie if they cast him.
Ric Flair.
Yeah, that wasn't my nature
boy. So you didn't like it?
It just did. I was not getting the real nature boy from him, from that performance. That's what it was. Not the stealing and dealing, styling and profiling, mile high jet flying. Woo! Like he wasn't delivering.
He wasn't giving.
Interesting thing about Ric Flair though, if I'm not mistaken, and please forgive me if I'm misspeaking here, I think he might have lost his son to a suicide. I know his son for a fact.
Flair?
Yeah, or I know for a fact his son died.
Let's see.
Because he had like problems with drugs, if I'm not mistaken. Or it was an overdose or something like that. Might have been an overdose. But he definitely lost his son and that fucked him up.
Oh yeah. Reed Flair. Flair was found dead in his bed at a residence in South Park, Nebraska. 25 years old. Drug overdose of heroin and traces of prescription tranquilizers. So it looks like it was an accidental overdose when he was 25 years old. Fuck.
Yeah. Kind of on some similar, I don't want to say similar, but you know, tragedy of losing the child. But like he was telling the story about their relationship on Club Shay Shay. Mm. And he broke down and was crying about it. It was very emotional.
Yeah, I can't imagine losing a kid. I don't know how you even come back from that. And I know most people really kind of don't. Like, it destroys your relationships and you start to feel guilty for having happy moments and shit like that. So I don't know.
That's tough.
At some point you do move past it, but
I don't think you ever necessarily move past it. It's just a thing of life goes on. And you have no choice. Either you sit and wallow in it and destroy yourself and the people around you, or you find a way to cope and find happiness throughout, like, the days. Mm. And also forgive yourself.
You go back to work, you know.
Yeah. I know a lot of people say, like, you know, that's the worst thing. Like, a parent should never bury their child.
Yeah, because apparently back in the day, that used to just be what would happen. Like, you would have 5 or 6 kids, and you know, like, only 2 of them are going to make it out. And so I don't know what their grief looked like back in those days when you just, a bunch of your kids die. Because nowadays we only have 1, so that's, you know, different.
When it comes to, like your mortality, no one ever wants to think about it. Like, not at least the majority of people, like, don't want to think about it.
And I'm not trying to do all that.
Right, because, I mean, like, it's crazy because, say, for instance, like, you know, someone who sells, like, life insurance. I used to do that shit.
Mm.
And, bro, like.
Oh, wait, you did?
Yeah. Bro, I tell you. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I used to sell, like, you know, life insurance as part of whatever. But.
You used to sell the fuck out of it, huh?
Huh? Hell no. I hate sales. but it's, like, it's just difficult to have.
What about when you die, sir? I don't want to think about that.
Right, but it's like, you know what I'm saying?
Okay,
hey,
sorry.
Do you have anything set up? You know what I mean? Because, you know, if you don't have anything set up, you know, because black people, we're the number one, like, group, and that's forced to, you know, pass the hat after a loved one dies, and like and that puts our loved ones in a tough situation. They're like, oh man, I hear you. How much is it gonna be? Well, good sir, that's gonna be an extra $280 a month for this permanent life insurance. You know what I'm saying? So, but anyway, I digress.
That's a lot.
It's just people when people think about their mortality. It's not a pleasant conversation, and a lot of people don't want to think about it, especially in terms of, like, finances that come along with it. But anyway.
No, I'm not trying to. Yeah, because it just – I don't like thinking about – less so now, but I do not like the idea of planning shit in a world where I'm not even there. I'm like, I'm dead, bro. I'm dead.
It's very strange.
What are we talking about, you know?
Especially, like, funeral. I feel – if my, like, girlfriend – if I were to die, my girlfriend spent more than, like, $50 on a funeral for me, I'd be pissed. Like, use that money, go on a vacation. They give you a plastic bag to.
They put you in a Glad bag.
Oh, they can't. No, because cremation is actually really expensive. They give me, like, just put the whole thing in a plastic bag. Here you go.
That's fucked up because.
And then where's the plastic bag go?
Throw it in the ocean. I don't care.
Yeah.
That can't be good for the ocean.
No, true.
Yeah. Nah, it's your ashes. Like, you know, it's going back to the earth. It's just nutrients for.
Oh,
the
when
earth.
They burn you.
Yeah. True. I mean,
that's fertilizer.
I mean, hell, even if they put up, never mind, that's too dark. But
hey, what's up?
I was about to say, even if they just put like a whole dead body in there, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's still fertilizer for the earth.
But see, I feel like we got too much chemicals in us. I feel like you throw a person in there, it'll fuck the whole ecosystem up.
I mean,
plus the plastic bag.
All the microplastics and whatnot.
Look, one person is probably not going to fuck shit up, but it will make the beach less pleasant in general.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I'm with Mac on that one. Like, I know I definitely do want to get cremated. Like, it ain't got to do all this grandiose, you know.
I want them to embalm me in resin, like Han Solo type shit. I want to be I want them to make me into like a coffee table or like a living statue in the living room with like a light, like LEDs underneath to like light my body. Like,
you know
what I mean? To keep watch over my family, you know?
That might be kind of lit. Like,
and then I'm trying to tell you,
they pass you down from generation to generation, like.
Exactly. And then as new, you know, members of the Overgold clan, like, die, we all get resin, and then it'll be a big hall by the time Tina Overgold.
Like on some.
A big hallway.
Yeah, some Avatar shit.
Exactly what I'm saying, yeah. You can come in, activate us, you know what I mean? Like, it would be the Hall of the Overgolds.
Oh, man.
I fuck with it. I'm down with that.
I can imagine, like, 200 years down the line, like, your great-great-great-grandchild or some shit is getting bullied, and then he just enters into the Overgold state, and then, like, all of y'all in the resin just eyes light up, and then then he just starts getting, like, all these verbal
breakdancing.
Karate skills and shit.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't have to do this. That from?
Yeah.
Oh, what's that?
Hiya. He makes it sound. Yeah, that's all I want. That's all I want. I think that's a good way to go out. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of good ways to go out, good people, it's been your boys waving the red flag podcast. If your parents are, is raising you to only achieve their goals in life, you might be seeing a red flag. And if your motherfucking daddy only just got you around to get a goddamn fucking plastic NWA, not even the WWF, the WWE, WCW World Championship belt. Nigga, it's definitely your daddy that's waving the red flag. Good people, it's been waving the red flag podcast. It's been Josh. It's been Eddie. It's been Macabre Storytelling. Mac, where can they find you?
Here on YouTube under Macabre Storytelling.
And that is spelled M-A-C.
Oh, M-A-C-A-B-R-E. Yes.
I was about to get you. Don't worry about it. I had to think about it for a second.
Sorry.
Storytelling with a Y.
Yeah.
Not a night. Absolutely. Mm.
We finally got the pronunciation down. I think we finally settled on a proper one.
Oh, that's sorted. So, that's sorted. Yeah. Linguistical on this podcast. We know we can say all the words.
Exactly.
We know all about that.
Yeah, one of my superpowers is being able to, like, you know, pronounce people's names correctly off the first or second try.
I've seen him do it. Mm-hmm. I've seen him do it.
They always be so impressed.
We met
Chiwetel Ejiofor. He got it immediately, first time.
And give kick-ass wrestling-like intros to the guests.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Welcome, brother.
That a thing. That was awesome.
Hey, appreciate you. You know what I mean? I'm in the right place. We're all in the right place. That's for sure.
That's where we're meant to be.
Absolutely. Hey. Peace, y'all. We love you. Oh, and Alvin, should be returning next
week.
He'll
be back.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, for any of y'all watching.
Totally forgot that shit.
Where they gonna find us at?
I was like, yo, for real, because I was like, man,
He's so giving.
It feels
weird. I love this podcast, but I can't watch another episode.
Oh my god!
Where do I find more?
Don't forget
to subscribe.
Like.
I don't know.
Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell, join the communities across the platforms if you have not done so already. The benefit of it is that you would get additional content and outtakes, access to the lives, all that good stuff is in the memberships across our platforms, such as, of course, YouTube, Spotify, and, you know, where else you know you fuck with us and listen to us at. So, yeah, we'll see you around.
That's it. Patreon, all those.
That good stuff.
It's the Iron Claw.
It's the Iron Claw!
You gotta put pressure on his skull, man.
Jesus. Yo, you saw how old
like
boy,
this. Like this.
You saw how David powered it up when he put the one hand over the claw, nigga?
Oh, shit.
What exactly was he doing? Was it just like digging your fingers?
He's just squeezing their noggin a little bit. Yeah. Whoop, 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 whoop. I gotcha.
With the ceiling from the color purple hands.
He was really just blessing them, you know what I'm saying? He was putting the Holy Spirit in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking in tongues and shit.
Exactly.
Mama na shay, mama na shah.
What is pain without pleasure?
Hallelujah. Praise the Lord. It's the Iron Claw.
It's the Iron Claw.
flag.